Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common cause. Hello, a common goal. Yes, I'm thinking about this because you're all already answering the question. Thank you. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Oh, yes, you're right. Also, prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now, let's get started. Yes, we've already started. A lot of you are already thinking about leadership style, which is what we're going to talk about this time. Yes. And, you know, we all have a style, but let's think about it kind of specifically. Because you don't necessarily think so much about your leadership style, do you? At least I don't. So let's think about what a leadership style is, first of all. Let's define it. Yes. I'm going to go with this one because I think it's really clear. The leadership style is your method for the negotiation process, right? It's what you put together, what you do, how you get the process to go forward. Is your leadership style. I'm going to go for this too, that leadership style is a comfort zone. Yeah, we talk about comfort zones, our participants having comfort zones, and our employers having comfort zones, but we have them too, don't we? We have things that are the way we've always done them, and it's worked. It's been successful. We see no reason to change, so that's our comfort zone. It's probably our leadership style. Yes, we all have one. Yes, I think that this is true too. Leadership style leads to your reputation, and it's why you were brought in, why you are the leader of this group, right? And kind of I suppose this is leadership style too, kind of an expectation of the way we will proceed, right? An expectation of how this is going to go, how we're going to go forward on this. So we're also going to talk about what are the various styles. So let's think about them. Yes, there's what I call democratic. It's popular in the United States, where we all kind of talk about it. Authoritative, questioning, and let's go for hybrid, which I think most things are, hybrid, kind of combo. Here's the question that people are asking, and it's a good question. Why should we change our style? Why should we change? It's working. How about to accommodate circumstances? Good point. Yes, to help create the team, to help create consensus. We might have to kind of insist in a different way, right? We might have cultural expectations. That's both corporate and ethnic, what I call ethnic, that's your culture, but also corporations, companies, organizations. They call it corporate culture because it sounds nice, you know, rhymes. But it's any kind of an organization can have a culture like that. Even families have cultures, have ideas about how things should be, right? Yeah. Yes, we might need to change our style in order to enforce the civility rules. Think about that too. So we're also going to talk about, now that we've decided what our style is and why we should change, we're going to talk about how we should change, right? Yeah. Yes, thank you. You're going to need some empathy for it, which is, of course, understanding, not necessarily agreement. I've actually seen this. In this particular show, we call whoever it is that had the good sense to bring us in as leader the employer. It does not necessarily indicate an employment relationship. So employer is used as a generic term for whoever we kind of answer to, whoever brought us in, right? Yeah. So it's not necessarily an employer-employee relationship. Sometimes the employer, we now understand that's a generic term, has requirements about how things are done. You usually see that in big organizations that have a lot of set rules that they really like and they really kind of keeps everybody on track and keeps everybody going. Usually they are big organizations that are multinational because the rules apply across the board, even if culturally you would not have done it that way. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there could be some employer requirements. How can we change our style? Well, we can look and see how we're doing with the team building. We might take some expert advice, too. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that the rest of this is really what I'm going to call, because a lot of you have wonderful ideas, I'm going to call change because of interactions. Change because things are happening. Excuse me, I take a sip of water. Pardon me. So, let's get into it before we run out of time. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, what is leadership style? We decided that it was a method for negotiation process, but what does that mean? Ah, good point. Muhammad and others are talking about the fact that you have to have a process in place, and one of the things you have to do is explain things to your participants and to others, whoever is taking an interest, because it's probably their first time. And you have to remember that because you have done it, well, many, many, many times. And you know what you're doing and you know what to expect and you know how the process goes. But this is their first time. They've never seen this before and they need some guidance. And we need to have some guidance. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm going to go with this too. Margaret says keep everyone in the loop, which is a little bit of an Americanism, but it means make sure that communication flows, that everybody knows what's going on. I personally, and I think people, all right, people complain about too many emails, but when, because they like to complain, but when you're doing a negotiation, when you're doing a group, when you've got something to say, when people need to be kept in the loop, which means that everybody is told everything, I think you can't have too much communication because you want to keep track. Yeah. You want to know how it's going, right? Yes. So you can't have too much communication, in my opinion. Yes, this is indeed one of my rules, one of my procedure, one of my process rules. And it's from long experience. Lee and others are talking about the fact that you distribute before the meeting. Yes, I require that if there's something that we need to read, something that we need to look at, something that we need to consider, that you send a preview to everybody, that you send it to everybody so we can read it ahead of the meeting. And you don't pass something complicated out at the meeting and expect everyone to pay attention because we're all looking at the complicated thing that you passed out. Yeah, and it takes undivided attention away from what we're going to do about it. So I ask for people to distribute things as we go along and not bring it to the meeting, right? Yeah, because we want to be able to consider it carefully. We want to think about it, for heaven's sake, not just shoot from the hip, as they say. Mm-hmm. People asking about interns, the answer is yes, you should have some. They're fabulous. But you should be picky. Recipe for Peace now has interns. This is true. But we're kind of picky about them, and that's from experience. We require that they be above bachelor degree college students, like master's degrees, right? Because they're already adults that way. And they understand that this is important, and it's a... Even though we are not paying them in money, which is kind of the definition of an intern, They're getting paid in, well, they're getting paid in life experience because they get to put us on their resume. But when they go for a job that actually pays money. But they're also usually getting paid in college credit. So they are getting a personal benefit, but the benefit is not money from us. Yes, there are some programs, this is true, there are some programs where people do get some money in addition to college credit, but it still doesn't come out of our pocket, out of the organization that they're working for's pocket. They are charitable groups that send someone with experience to various small charities and things and social service organizations and stuff that needs help but can't really actually pay market value. Mm-hmm. We don't participate in it, so I'm not certain how it works. But I think you have to be more of a social services type organization, more of a social services type agency that needs, well, for example, computer assistance or something like that, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Because they're not qualified to speak with clients. So interns are a wonderful thing. We actually interview. We ask that they be able to stay more than a semester because if they're on quarterly, that's not very long. And by the time we get them up to speed on what to do, they're gone. They've gone on to a different internship or paid position or something. And so we do ask that they make a commitment. Usually it's for 6 months. Sometimes for a year, depending on their level. And yes, and we do take only higher up in their education type students, like MBA candidates, which is a Master of Business Administration. Yeah, we are actually popular and people stay on as volunteers afterwards because they really liked us. But the interns need work on your part. They need to be watched, they need to be graded, they need to be trained, they need to have a valuable experience and not just be there as slave labor. I'm always amazed by the fact that people seem to think that interns are like slave labor. They just use them to move boxes and things. No, that's not the idea. They're supposed to be getting experience. They're supposed to be gaining real-world experience. Well, yeah, I suppose maybe being treated like a slave is real-world experience. Some of you are disagreeing with me. You're going, that is real-world experience. It's good to learn. Well, all right. But you need to be able to kind of watch them and mentor them. And you give them it's not usually a grade. It's usually a pass-fail. But you write reports about them and things. You see, they're kind of time-consuming. And they have no value when they show up because they don't know anything. And so they have to be trained, right? Right. So you want to keep them long enough so that training is worth something to you, so that they can help you, so that they can do so they can have a real hands-on life experience. I think that if you can possibly afford it, because I know there are budgetary constraints, you should have one at least well-paid, well-organized, really valuable assistant, right? Yes. And that's because somebody needs to be there continuously, for one thing. The students come and go. And the other thing is that you need to have someone watch them, watch the process, send things out properly. Yeah, it's a matter of process, a matter of getting it together. And you as leader need to make sure that these things are done. You don't have to do them. But you got to know that they're being done. And not somehow get an ugly surprise that, I don't know, communication was not had when it was supposed to be done. So you need to keep tabs. At least I do. I keep some procedural interest in everything to make sure we're doing okay. Now, as you get more experienced And as you get more, well, more ability to hire someone, you pay them a real salary. And I have someone who's self-starter, who is capable of doing all this stuff without being specifically supervised by the leader. And that's what you would like. You would like to have someone who's a self-starter. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to leadership comfort zone, because that is kind of your leadership style. It's how you've always been done, how you've acted for all these years. And it is, I'll go for comfort zone. I really will, because I think that that's a reasonable way of thinking about it. That you really like leading in this manner, and you don't really want to change, because this is how it's done. This is how you do it, right? Right. Well, you got to be somewhat careful of preconceived notions, because maybe times have changed. Maybe what the circumstances are now are not the circumstances that they once were. Pardon me. In fact, every time you start a new project, right? Even if it's the same people, even if it's very similar circumstances, it's still new. And you'll still be able to think about it and not have a bunch of preconceived notions about what this person is going to do or what that person is going to do. Especially have no preconceived notions about the impact. I hate unintended consequences. I, generally speaking, have an expert tell me ahead of time. Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. But it is your comfort zone. And you have to really think about it to go out of it, I think. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to reputation. Yes, I think this is true. Yes. Stephen and others are saying that you need to be careful which jobs you choose in order to enhance your reputation. I think that's fair. I really do. I like to get a little snippet of what's going on before I say yes to be hired for something, because I want to know what kind of repercussions we're going to have. What kind of unintended consequences, right? Yeah. And so also, you have to deal with the employer ahead of time. You need to carefully. I know when you're new, when you're first starting out, it's kind of like, well, I need the business. Yes, but get straight what really is going on before you set foot in it, is my advice. I meet with the employer more than once. I like to establish where we are in the process, and I would like the employer to help define success. I want to know what they want. And sometimes, in fact, if I may say somewhat frequently, define what it is that the employer wants, how to define success, is not an easy task. You think it would be, but it's not. And if you don't get that straightened out ahead of time, your reputation will suffer when the group doesn't do well. And it won't be your fault, right? Yeah. So you need to carefully choose what it is you're going to do to enhance your reputation. Mm-hmm. Yes, the reputation is also the reason you're brought in as a leader, which is different. That's the first we talked about was the overseeing important procedural things. And this is the expectations of circumstances now. Excuse me, I need to blow my nose. I know it's a live show. It's just one of those things. Hang on a second. Hmm. there we go. Here I am, back again. Sorry about that. It shows it's a live show and unscripted, right? So the reason you're brought in has to do with your reputation. Sometimes you're brought in because you have a reputation for being able to handle this type of group, these types of issues. You've done it before, right? Mm-hmm. And there's an expectation of success that goes with your reputation, right? And you do need to come right out and figure out how to define success, because otherwise people won't know when they've got it. And that's very bad. You need to know when you have achieved success. Yes. It's very important. That's not a minor issue. And you need to decide who it is that's going to define this success. Is it going to be the employer? You need to get that straightened out before you take on the employment, right? Just talked about that. Is it going to be the team as a group? We're going to do it democracy-wise. Is it going to be outsiders and their reaction? Sometimes that happens, right? Mm-hmm. How about the media, which makes public opinion? Mm-hmm. I have to think about how to approach them, how to deal with them, how to have rules that says you cannot blog, which is public domain, everywhere while we're in process. Because the media will pick it up and will skew whatever it is to their own, well, not to their advantage necessarily, but to make a good story. Which is just human nature. Right? Right. So you need to define success. Thank you. Yes, this is a good point too. Uh-huh. Yes. Annika and others are saying that one of the types of people you need to talk to also is your invisible participants, because they're going to define success for your actual participants. Your invisible participants are those people who are or organizations who are taking an interest in what is happening, taking an interest in the procedures, but don't want to come forward and be known. Therefore, the term invisible, right? They don't want to come with their name and their identity and their photograph. No, but they do have something you would like to know, and you must keep the confidence of who they are as part of your reputation, that you will not break your word. If I tell you that I won't, whatever it is, right? I won't divulge your information. I won't divulge your identity. I won't, whatever it is that I've been asked not to do by the invisible participants, I will not reveal your identity, right? Usually. These folk are interesting, and you must keep your word of not telling in order to keep your reputation. It is not negotiable. You cannot say, you'll be anonymous, I won't tell anyone, and then tell. Yes, people are asking how come people want to be anonymous. The answer is usually not because of something nefarious. Usually it's because they are working for the status quo. And they don't want to be known that they think that the kind of upstarts have a better idea, right? Yeah. They're working from the status quo and they want to remain invisible. You must keep this confidence even if you've made the mistake of leaving some sort of a little trail. Mm-mm. Be careful. Your reputation is at stake. Mm-hmm. Let's think about various styles. Mm-hmm. We talked about the first one as being democratic. Democratic is popular around here. In my country, it's the most popular kind. It's kind of guided group team discussions guided by the leader. You don't not have a job because it's team discussions and you're the leader and you want to guide people. But it is an expectation that we will come to consensus relatively peacefully, right? Well, we're going to do some negotiation, but we're going to come and we're going to talk it out, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. On the other spectrum is authoritative. That's where the leader tells you what to do. I sometimes think that I'm a mix of both. I guess that makes me a hybrid. Because as you can see, I'm fairly friendly and fairly pleasant. And the authoritative one is not my general leadership style. But it is if you push me. If you've got a bully, if you need to enforce if you need to enforce the civility rules, maybe, right? The leader tells you what to do, and you do it. Sometimes they want the leader to decide what path to take and what they should do. Got to get that straight, that that's what they want, A. And B, you have to decide whether or not you're competent to do that. I see people take on kind of an authoritative leadership role sometimes. And one of the reasons they fail is that they weren't good at it. Now, my general way of leadership is not authoritative, but I'm good at it, if that's what's necessary. And sometimes, you ever hear the expression, maybe this is an Americanism too, you have to set your foot down. You have to be sure that the group doesn't get out of hand. So I think, and what we're going to talk about at the very end, and what we're talking about really now is, I think all leadership is a hybrid, right? Because sometimes your client needs you to be authoritative and to really not allow hidden agendas to take over and not allow bullying and have civility rules and like that, right? And sometimes you need to decide as a team where you're going. That's democratic. And the third kind of leadership style that I think exists, pardon me, my voice is going in and out today, that I think exists is, I'm going to call it questioning. It's when you ask a bunch of questions to elicit a response so that your participants think it's their idea, which gives them better buy-in, which makes them more willing to really work, right? Water time, excuse me. Really, I had a voice when we started. Thank you. Yes, thank you. People are giving me suggestions about my voice, and it is true that I'm drinking a bottle of cold water, and people are going, we should have lemon tea and stuff like that. And yes, I'll do that later. Thank you for telling me. But you've got questioning. Will you ask a bunch of questions to elicit responses, so it allows your participants, your employer, and everybody else to really think it through? Because sometimes you've got something that hasn't been thought through, and what they are advocating, in your opinion, not practical. And you know, we want to come out with a workable solution. I am quite not in favor of the term "we agreed in principle." No. We want to agree in what we're going to do about it, not in principle, which means we haven't agreed at all. We are just still fighting around about it, but we've got sick of trying, so we decided to say we agreed in principle. Well, what did you agree to? We agreed in the principle of agreeing. No. So you need to guide it. That's what leaders do. We're guides. We guide them to the proper workable solution. Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. And so you really, real successful leadership is a hybrid of all of that. Right? Yeah. Well, people asking, about the civility rules, because I mentioned them. The civility rules are basically the only rules the Recipe for Peace now has. And they say at their core, we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. We will act in a civil manner and respectful. We will have a respectful, convivial atmosphere. Mm-hmm. You announce the civility rules when you start the group, and then you must enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. Because you want to enforce the civility rules, that's kind of authoritarian, right? Immediately, and not let the group go uncivil. And then say, oh, you know those civility rules that we talked about when we first started? Now we're going to think about them. No, you need to enforce them consistently. You need to, and fairly and immediately. Because otherwise it's going to get away from you, and it is hard to get things back. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So you've got a hybrid going according to the circumstances, according to what needs to be done, really according to kind of the personality of the people you're dealing with too. Sometimes you get people who are all kind of one mind, and they're a pleasure, and they just need you to help guide them towards a workable solution. They know what they want. It's just complicated to do. And the question is, how should we really get this going, is the question that's being asked. And you need to be able to answer it. You need to know what it is that we're going to need in order to get to our successful outcome. And sometimes you have groups that are completely uncivil. And you have to kind of tame them, right? Now, you don't want to just tell them what to do decision-wise, but you do need to tell them what to do, well, rudeness-wise, just in the process, right? Not exactly the answer, which we're going to lead them to, but the, no, you can't do that. It is not civil. In order to have successful civility rules, as you can see, they are words, right? And if someone's really a bully or has an agenda to try to disrupt the process, then you need something more than words, which is one of the things I get very straight with the employer, remember, it's a generic term, before I start. And what I get very straight is the idea that the employer will back me if I need to enforce the civility rules. The employer will back me with some sort of a real answer to the question posed by the person who wants to be a bully and has been uncivil. What they really want to know is what you gonna do about it, right? I want to be uncivil. I want to be a disruption. I have a hidden agenda, and I want this group to fail. That happens quite a bit, right? What you gonna do about it? And the answer is, well, some sort of power that the employer has given you. And I'm gonna call in the employer to sit in on the negotiation. And I'm going to ask them to enforce whatever it is they're supposed to enforce that's not being enforced. Right? Right. So you need to have the employer back you so that you've got some teeth. And you can answer the question, what you're going to do about it, in you're going to be demoted because only people of a certain level can be in this group and you are not giving it your best effort. Right? Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is the next question is kind of why change? Well, usually people change because the circumstances change, right? That's how you would change your leadership style, basically, and make it more one thing or the other, and less kind of, well, we'll break out the big guns when we need to, but we're going to be kind of democratic the rest of the time, which is a concept of hybrid, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Change of circumstances, yes. People are talking about interior, internal and external, right? And sometimes circumstances change within your group. Sometimes the group makeup changes in midstream if it's taking a while and people serve for a term. I see this with things that are like committees. And people have a term commitment, a certain amount of time. And then their term is up and they wander off and you get a new person. It makes the group dynamic different, just naturally speaking. Yeah, you wouldn't think it does, but it does. It makes the group dynamic different just naturally because you've got new ideas, new people, new folks in the room that everybody would like to get to know. Yes. So it is important that sometimes you have a team change or circumstances change, internally and external. I've had teams where the circumstances externally change. Sometimes the problem is solved, and it's not by us. But we're a great team, and we go on to the next thing. Yeah. So you have to know that, too. Why change? Sometimes there is a real cultural reason, a corporate culture or an ethnic culture that you're encountering. Sometimes I have this when I deal with multinationals and my leadership style changes depending on the country, depending on the culture, depending on the corporate culture within that company. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's outside. It's elders culture. You know, they go, oh, elder. Yeah. So it's important to know that. And it's also important to know how to change. How are we going to determine if we need to make a leadership style change? How are we going to know that? Well, let's get some empathy. Yeah. Let's think about it. Let's get some empathy. Remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Yes, empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. This is a good point that we don't often make. A lot of times, well, I suppose it depends what kind of work you do, but a lot of times, the people that are in the group, the people that need to reach consensus, are not of the same native speaking language. They don't, for example, all speak English. They speak it sufficiently, but it's a nuanced language and it's got kind of some rules and some double entendres. You know what I mean? Like every language, it's easy to get misunderstood if you're kind of fishing for the word, fishing for the term that goes with it. And I indeed will come in with interpreters, with language interpreters. I do, yeah, the computer ones. They've gotten a lot better. They used to be horrible. Now they are passable. But I still like a human being because they can make a judgment as to what you are saying and the computer wouldn't necessarily pick it up properly. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I like to say no, kind of temporarily to the idea of yes, whether or not you're going to use a computer interpretation. Because it has to be a really high quality one. written is easier than spoken, computer interpretation-wise. Does a pretty darn good job, AI, of doing written interpretation. Spoken, not so much, because you have nuances and things. We don't often talk about them. They're kind of experts, too, and they can also have an opinion, right? Yes. I'm getting odd things on my computer screen. Sorry, that's why I went, Yes, I think this is true. I think you should, okay, if you're about to change your leadership style, you have to give it a thought. Sometimes you could call in an expert, call in somebody, and ask them what they think of that, why they think this is not, you wouldn't be changing your leadership style if it was going really well, right? Can we say that? I think that that's a fair statement. You wouldn't be changing your leadership style if things were going hunky-dory, if they were going really, really well. So you might bring in an expert to take a look at your group, to take a look at the dynamic, right? Maybe you're too close. Because you can't change your style completely, drastically, and like a hard stop in midstream. You have to hybrid it, right? And you might need some help as to what to do about certain situations that have come up. Well, yes, we've got the employer threat, but I think sometimes people should go on vacation and let somebody else take their spot, for example. But these people are very adamant that they need the whatever is the status quo, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking at, you guys are so smart. I'm looking at all of your questions and answers. And the answer is, and people are saying who's the expert to ask for that. We don't talk about mentorship very much. Perhaps we should do a show on it. Mentorship is when you've got somebody who you trust to come and look at it. Now, the mentor is usually somebody in the business who is on your side, on the leader's side. I oftentimes bring the employer in if I'm experiencing difficulty with the civility rules, for example, so that they can see it and so that everybody knows that I can bring the employer in. There's a certain amount of future factor in that, right? Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, right? How do we change our style? It depends on the situation, because you show up with your stuff, but maybe it's not the right. Maybe we need something else. Team building requires consensus, and if you can see that this group is never going to have consensus, we should try a different tact. No, we're not going to give up. We never give up. It's not in our nature. But a different tact is. All righty. Yes, I think that's true. As you get more experience, you become kind of intuitively flexible with your style. I think that's a fair statement. Yeah. Lee and others are saying that you kind of naturally go up and back. Yes, and sometimes you can modify from authoritative to more team building, more questioning and democratic, because you have to come in kind of new sheriff in town. And then as we work together well, we can modify exactly how we do it, right? Yeah. And that's an important point, because sometimes you have to kind of establish that you're in charge. Well, you are, but you need to establish it, yeah. And it, I see this a lot because I'm, if I have a specialty, and I don't know if I do or not, but if I have a specialty, it is to come into groups that have already not been successful. They have failed. Yes, I don't like to use the word failure, but they have. And they need guidance. But and they need to get success. But the same people are still in the group. What I'm telling you is they've got a mindset of failure, A, and B, usually the prior leader is now a participant. Now, this is just human nature. If you were the prior leader and you failed, would you like to be able to say, well, I didn't make it, but neither did Sue. And if Sue can't make it, it can't be done. Yeah, wouldn't that be kind of good? Right? Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Yes. Sue couldn't make it. It can't be done. Right? Yes, I think that that is, that's something to be taken into account, as they say. Yes. And yes, and that, and so you start out authoritative and explain what's going to happen if you don't give me your best effort and are trying to sabotage the group. And then as we calm down and we understand this, we can get more democratic and we can use more questioning to get them around to how come it failed the first time and how come we are not going to have a repeat of that. Right? Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. It is. Sometimes you don't pick your participants. In fact, oftentimes you do not. They might pick you, actually, by reputation if they get to choose a group. But you get what you get, which is why you have to have some empathy and some understanding and really look at body language and look at what everybody else is doing and like that. It is very important to have a convivial atmosphere that is workable. Remember, we're not going to do agreed in principle. Okay, it's been weeks, and I know this, since we've had a recipe. So I have less time for a recipe because I know you guys like them, and then I just don't do it because we run out of time because we have such fabulous discussions. And this was a fabulous discussion too, but let's do a recipe. Okay, our organization, Recipe for Peace Now, thinks that you should have some food in the room when you're doing a negotiation process. Because not necessarily because you're hungry. I mean, it might be dinner. You might be hungry. But really because food is a tool to get people talking to each other, usually over some that they're not going to fight about. Oh, that looks delicious. How did you learn to make it? What's it? What? How long does it take? I've never seen that kind of stuff. Yes, this is good. We're going to talk about the food. They're going to talk about each other. And we're going to talk about what we have in common. You'd be surprised. The other day I had two people, God, they looked like they really were not going to have anything in common and really, really disliked each other on principle, if you know what I mean. And they found out they had grandchildren in the same school. Now, how fun is that? Right? Yeah. So we want the food as a tool. It's also a tool in case we need to have a timeout. Things are going a little bit uncivil, and we're going to have a timeout, and the leader is going to have a little private talk with somebody, right? Right. Especially if you have one of those people, and I see it a lot because I deal with lawyers a lot. I can say this because I'm a lawyer. And I sometimes deal with people who, it's the darndest thing, everything they say seems nasty. Did you ever deal with people like that? Seems argumentative. They're not even arguing. They're on your side. But everything they say seems kind of abrasive. And you need to kind of take them aside and kind of explain that they need to to kind of calm their participation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they don't realize it. And that's really the truth. So we're going to have food. We're going to take a survey because we want to know if anybody has food they can't eat, food that they won't eat because it's some sort of prohibition, a religious prohibition, whatever on earth it is. We don't want to serve it. We want everybody to have a good time. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. And, yes, I think that you should have at least have a safe recipe. A safe recipe is one where my people, your people, my people, would, each of our peoples, would have seen this food before. And they know that they can eat it. Right? An adventure recipe has more moving parts, has more spice for meat, for example, and like that. I mean, you don't want to run out, but you don't want to have someone have a bad experience. So this is the same, and then you can have an adventure recipe because you've taken your survey, and you can bring something that everybody in this group can eat. And I will also ask that my people bring a list of what's in the item that they bring. Not what it's called, but what's inside, so I can run my eye down the list and see if I can eat that, right? See if it's something that I can do. Mm-hmm. And we have many dishes, so people can take their choices. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's use the creamy yogurt chicken base. Because the recipe has been hanging around longest. It is the safe recipe because in my area, all of this stuff would be things that everybody had eaten before. Now, maybe you live in an area where a curry would be extremely common and everybody would have eaten it before. So maybe this is your adventure recipe and a curry would be my adventure recipe, but this is my safe one. So you have to decide. We're going to have 6 cups of cubed cooked chicken, about 3 pounds, maybe 4 pounds of it. All right, secretly. I say secretly because I don't want you to give anybody ptomaine. Secretly, this is a great recipe for leftovers because you can use leftover turkey, leftover chicken. You want to make an adventure recipe, you can use leftover pork like ham, but it makes an adventure recipe because people don't eat pork, right? Mm-hmm. But it's fabulous. As kind of a day after dish, and it smells delightful in the room if you're lucky enough to have some kitchen equipment in the room, a stove and like that. So 6 cups of cubed cooked chicken breast or whatever we just discussed, 1 cup of sliced celery, 1 cup of chopped yellow, and 1 cup of chopped, that's one each, a chopped yellow and a chopped red pepper. Mm-hmm. Let's have 1 cup of mozzarella because it looks nice. It's about 3 inches, about 1 cup. I like a lot of cheese. Mm-hmm. We're going to use condensed cream of chicken soup. I know it's kind of cheating, but it's delicious in this. It's nice and creamy. And if you want to mess with a roux and cream and like that, God bless you. And do it, yours will be better than mine. But I'm going to use 2 cans, the regular size cans, where they 10 ounces, of condensed cream of chicken soup. And we're going to have 6 ounces of plain yogurt. Make sure it's plain and you drain it off because it's got that whey on top. Let's preheat the oven to 400. Let's stir together the chicken, the celery, the peppers, the cheese, the soup, and the yogurt. Oh, yummy. Already we've got the insides. There we go. We're going to put it all in a nice, like a 2-quart rectangular baking dish. I grease everything. I don't know why. I just think you should. But it really doesn't come out in squares, so maybe you don't have to. You already put it in there. This is an easy recipe. Take the almonds, sprinkle them over the top. In fact, you could do it a little bit later, but I like them to be kind of toasty, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to cook this thing uncovered for 30 minutes in the oven because everything is basically cooked, right? Right. Yeah. You've got the raw vegetables, but they're going to get nice and cooked and soft with the heat of the chicken mixture. Yes. You just throw it all in, basically. Put it in the oven. It gets a nice toasty brown, like a little crust to it. That's how you know that we're in business. It's done. Put the little almonds on the top. I like sliced almonds. You could put breadcrumbs. It's lovely. Also, tasty breadcrumbs, the kind that have a little taste to them. Yes, you could put more cheese on the top. Although the cheese is going to get a little bit damp because of the bottom when you cut into it. But yes, you certainly could with the breadcrumbs, hopefully. You bake it uncovered. What you're doing is you're heating it through. I usually let it stand about 10 minutes before actually serving with a nice big spoon because it is very, very hot and it kind of settles. Now, you'll notice that this doesn't have a starch to it. I use rice. I put the rice cooker out, and I let people take as much as they'd like. Yes. So this is the safe recipe. Easy to do. Everybody likes it, and it doesn't make too big of a mess either, if I might say. Yes. My friends, we are out of time. We will get to the second one next time. But now we've finally gotten to the yogurt chicken base. Bake. That's like a casserole. It's kind of a bake. It's delicious. And we will get to the pasta with clams next time. I was calling it clam pasta, but people called up, not called up, but they sent an email, is it pasta made of clams? So I was like, no, it's pasta with clams. Yay! My friends, we are out of time. Thank you very, very much for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Our prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.